This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Mike Strands. Mike is Vice President of Advocacy with the National Farmers Union in Washington, D.C., and will join us in just a few moments. First off, let's talk record heat across Arizona, specifically Phoenix. Brad Rippey with USDA.
In the Southwest, we did get a little bit of a break from the extreme heat. Phoenix, Arizona ended up racking up 31 consecutive days with 110 degree heat. By far and away, an all-time record for that city. If you're looking at the old record, it was just 18 days of 110 degree heat set back in June of 1974. So not only was it a record that had stood for almost half a century, but it was almost doubled by the time the streak finally ended on July 31st with a high of only 108 degrees.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Mike Strands. Mike is Vice President of Advocacy, National Farmers Union. He's in Washington, D.C. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tony. Glad to be here.
I would imagine at this point, the August recess is here, and Congress, for the most part, has left D.C., gone back to the district or the state, and they're listening to their constituents. But still, Farm Bill is the end of this current Farm Bill is getting closer and closer. Is that a concern that that others are watching?
Those who are watching the calendar would be quick to point out that there's only 11 or 12 legislative days left until the Farm Bill expires on September 30th, because Congress will come back to D.C. later in or early September, I guess. And, with those 11 days, that's a long ways. There's a long ways to go in the Farm Bill process and a short time to get there. And there's a few other things that are looming on September 30th as well. For instance, none of the appropriations bills have passed that would fund the government beyond September 30th. So it's a near guarantee that there's going to be a lot more to talk about besides just the Farm Bill once Congress comes back to town in September. There's going to have to be a continuing resolution to keep the government funded or maybe both, along with a lengthy debate about government shutdown and things like that. So it appears that there might be some movement on the Farm Bill before September 30th, perhaps some markups in either the House and or the Senate in September, probably more likely to be the House than the Senate from indications today. But even if those do happen, there's still much, much more to do before the Farm Bill would be signed into law. It's going to be later this year, it seems, and hopefully it's not much beyond that.
Now, we might normally, if we're talking Farm Bill, would be talking about not necessarily party divisions. Usually it's more of geographic regions that maybe don't always get along. But when we're talking about Congress, there has been a polarization between the parties. But now we're seeing some of that within the parties, especially on the Republican side. Does that add another layer, if you will, to this onion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is another layer of complexity to have different caucuses or factions within parties approaching the Farm Bill differently. Although that's not necessarily a new phenomenon. That's come up in the 2018 Farm Bill, the 2014 Farm Bill, I'm sure all the way back when into some of the first Farm Bills, there's been some inter-party debates. But the way that it's shaping up right now, particularly within the Republican caucus, like you said, with the Freedom Caucus or others holding out for some deeper budget cuts during the appropriations debates that were going on back in late July. I guess that's only a week ago, but it seems like a lot longer than that. Those sorts of divisions are going to make it difficult for a Farm Bill to pass, but not impossible. There's just a lot of work yet to be done to find 218 votes to pass the right Farm Bill this year.
Now, ironically, the Senate in the last Farm Bill debate, had a pretty overwhelming majority, very bipartisan support for the Farm Bill. Do the cards seem to indicate the same thing might be coming with this debate?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes, Senator Roberts, Pat Roberts from Kansas, who is the chairman of the Ag Committee, on the Senate side in the 2018 process, still today is talking about having about 90 votes in favor of the farm bill on the Senate side on the conference report. And I think Senator Stabenow wants to get something similar to that, if not more. But there's a lot of work to do there yet. And the Senate markups probably come up later in the fall, and then some negotiations with the House, hopefully passed version of the farm bill, will be required. So I don't want to make any, I won't place my bets on how many votes in favor of a farm bill the Senate might see this time around. We've got a ways to go before the bets begin.
Well, let's talk about what could be in that farm bill, maybe what needs to be in that farm bill, because every commodity and every general ag group has a list of priorities, if you will. Does Farmers Union have one as well?
Right. Well, especially this spring, when both the House and Senate Ag Committees had a series of hearings here in Washington for priorities for, say, the Title I commodity programs and crop insurance efforts. There were hearings on conservation, there were hearings on nutrition. You know, the groups came in, shared their priorities, and are continuing to do that with a few listening sessions that have been going on around the country, even yet this week. Back in Monday in Maine, some Farmers Union members took part in a listening session up there with Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, Chairman Thompson, and a cast of other members of the Agriculture Committee were there. Similarly, something like that happened at Minnesota Farm Fest on Wednesday. More ideas were shared there. Farmers Union certainly has priorities, too. And when we look at the top issues for a strong farm bill in 2023, we want to make sure really five things are in there. That's making sure there's competition issues are addressed through the farm bill. We've been emphasizing that through our Fairness for Farmers campaign to tackle the monopoly crisis in agriculture. We want to make sure farm programs are strengthened through making sure that there's disaster assistance ready to go when the inevitable strikes and good risk management tools available. We want to make sure that there's an effort to enact the dairy revitalization plan. We're hearing a lot in the last few weeks and couple months here as prices have really slid in dairy to bring back some ideas that Farmers Union's been pushing for years on growth management within the dairy industry. We want to make sure that we're helping farmers be good stewards and to tackle the climate crisis. We've been ready to do that and made some progress there. And another point that's come up recently especially is ensuring that USDA has the staffing it needs to carry out these important programs. I think you could talk to just about any farmer out there who's been to an FSA office and knows that USDA is strained in getting these programs that are so important implemented and into the field. So those are our five big priorities going into August on the farm bill.
Now, you mentioned a couple of listening sessions, one in Maine and one in Minnesota. Really, the opportunity for your members to get out. It's one thing for National Farmers Union, for Mike to go in and say, hey, here are our priorities. How important is it for your actual members, your actual farmers in states, whether it's Minnesota, Maine, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, wherever?
It's hugely important for members of organizations to make those connections, to have their voice heard by their elected officials, and not just from the staff for your national organization in Washington to do that. We certainly can help amplify and connect you with the people who need to hear that message, and we can help deliver it too. But that person-to-person interaction you might have when your member of Congress is back in town in August, or you meet with some staff who are also around, those sorts of ties, direct stories, putting a face to the policy is really, really helpful and the most important sort of connection when it comes to working with your elected officials.
Now, there is another group, corn growers, who have recently kind of come out with a position on base acres. What's happening there?
Right. A couple of weeks ago, the National Corn Growers Association's Corn Congress came to D.C. and considered some policy provisions, voted in favor of including a mandatory base acre update in the next farm bill. And that is a big idea and is a shift from what a lot of other groups had talked including Farmers Union, of supporting a voluntary update for base acres. You know, we can go into some weeds here, I suppose, on how Title I of the Farm Bill is structured, but the way that those programs are built is around base acres or historical average plantings on a particular farm or plot. And by updating those base acres from whether it's how many acres are included in it and have been planted or what plantings have occurred on those acres, be it, you know, more soybeans on former wheat base or what have you, there's some huge effects and some big ripples if a national mandatory base acre update goes into effect. And I'm no ag economist, and fortunately there are plenty of ag economists who have done some deep dives into that already, and it looks like it's a big mixed bag, I suppose, for which regions in the country or which crops might see more, or even just which farmer might see a stronger safety net as a result. There's a lot of questions about what a program ought to look like. Should it be based on what you're actually planting, or should it be based on some historical average and some other formulas to figure that out? But the effect is that there'd be some mixed results across the country.
And as we run out of time here, about 30 seconds left, one of the priorities Farmers Union has had in the past is right to repair. Are you seeing some positive movement on that front?
We are seeing some positive movement on right to repair. Of course, there were some victories in the state of Colorado this year with a bill that passed. Got some very high-profile coverage of that as farmers seek to be able to fix their own stuff and to not be reliant upon some high-dollar services or other fees from the big equipment manufacturers. And I expect we'll see some more good news on that as the administration, the Biden administration, state governments, and Congress keep working towards ensuring that right to repair.
All right, Mike, we've run out of time, but if we want to keep up with Farmers Union, how can we do that?
Absolutely. Well, find us on social media. I'd say Twitter, but I don't know what it's called anymore. But NFUDC or NFU.com, excuse me, NFU.org, and you can find the latest and greatest about what Farmers Union is doing in your part of the country.
Mike Strands is Vice President of Advocacy with the National Farmers Union in Washington, D.C., and joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Where is the beef industry heading? Find out firsthand October 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Gaylord Texan Resort in Grapevine. It's Texas Cattle Feeders Association's annual convention featuring John Foley, a former Blue Angels pilot, and mentalist and illusionist Wayne Hoffman. The 2023 TCFA annual convention in Grapevine. Learn more online, tcfa.org. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Mike Strands with the National Farmers Union.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Supporting the High Plains cotton producer is the number one priority for Plains cotton growers. Since its inception in 1956, PCG has focused on being the advocate for High Plains cotton and a respected voice on cotton issues. Protecting the interest of the High Plains cotton producer requires a dependable, dedicated organization focused on getting results, and cotton producers depend on the organization they founded, Plains Cotton Growers. From the halls of Congress to the turn rows of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Mike Strands with the National Farmers Union.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
A slow start to Western wildfire season in 2023.
For the United States as a whole, we got well into July before we saw extensive wildfire activity.
Yet, over the last week of July, a pickup in wildfire activity, according to USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
And that has finally pushed the year-to-date wildfire acreage in the United States past the 1 million mark. As of the end of July, we have seen just about 1.2 million acres burned across the United States. That is still significantly below the 10-year average of just about 3.8 million acres for the first 7 months of the year.
The pickup in wildfire activity has occurred primarily in California and Nevada, although most of the current fire map includes several small fires in the desert southwest. Two notable complexes are also currently active in the Pacific Northwest. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.